Hello and welcome to the Gandhara, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Afghanistan has just marked the biggest celebration of the year called Nowruz, which is the first day of Afghanistan's solar calendar. With New Year, the country has also marked one of the bloody years, more assertive Taliban and more confusion on what to do with those militants. During the last year, while the Taliban militants have intensified their activities in response, at the times Afghan authorities tried to engage them in peace talks, some other times they bumped them to their death, but no one of these tactics proving useful. On today's Gandhara podcast, we will be looking into what is really going wrong with Afghanistan's Taliban strategy. In the light of previous success and failures, what is the best way forward to deal with the Taliban? To discuss all this, I have Hikmatullah Azami, who is the research analyst at the Center for Conflict and Peace Studies in Kabul, who originally hails from Taliban's heartland, Kandahar. Mr. Azami, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you, Mr. Taya. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you. Eric Jones is joining us from Washington, D.C., who was former intelligence analyst with U.S. Marines in areas covering eastern Afghanistan. Eric, welcome to the Gandhara.
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Very nice to have you, Eric. Bill Roggio, editor of Long War Journal, who at the times embedded with the Canadian Army in Afghanistan, is joining us. I believe, Bill, you must have been mapping the same street in Kandahar as did Mr. Azami. Welcome to the Gandhara.
Thanks. It's a pleasure. And yeah, that is certainly possible.
Thank you. And Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan and Afghanistan, is joining us. Abu Bakr hails from the tribal region of Pakistan with knowledge of how things were shaking up in what Afghan authorities call in the hotbed of the Taliban. Abu Bakr, welcome to the Gandhara.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you, gentlemen. So let me get into the discussion with you, Mr. Azami. It's been some time since Afghan authorities are engaged in peace talks with the Taliban. It seems not much happening these days. Where we are now with these talks?
Well, I mean, as a lot of us are aware of and the progress in peace talks since President Ghani took office in 2014, he primarily was focusing on cementing ties with Pakistan, with China, that had a lot of, is considered a great strategic partner, that have leverage over Pakistan to some sort of make the Taliban come to peace progress. I will just go a little bit up to the background. So, you know, and recall what happened. The only success story in peace talks was the Murray meeting. And then what happened was announcement of Mullah Omar's death, which derailed the Murray progress. And, you know, the second round was scheduled to be either held in China or Pakistan. China even issued visas to the Taliban delegation to participate in the second round. But then the Mullah Omar's death was revealed, announced, and that derailed the peace process. Then there was quite a larger coordination group. So now what the Afghan government is doing, it's absolutely disappointed with the outcomes of the quadrilateral coordination group, the QCG meetings that held five rounds of meetings.
Before getting into that, so how we get to this point, that's a big question. Abu Bakr, do you like to jump in? What have been most peak and hopeless stages of these talks so far? Mr. Azami hinted about a little direction change since Ashraf Ghani is in power in Afghanistan, from instead of dealing directly with the Taliban, involving some other regional powers into the discussion. So what has been so far some of the peak points and the elements which was hopeless really in these talks?
Well, I will try to be very brief and to the point. I think there are two kind of stalemates going on in Afghanistan or around Afghanistan. I mean, the conflict in Afghanistan. One is a military conflict inside Afghanistan on the battleground, where the Taliban have made some advances, particularly in rural areas, but they are still not capable of capturing and then keeping large population centers, which in Afghanistan's case are mostly provincial capitals and, of course, the capital, Kabul. And there is a political stalemate. I don't think that there was ever, I mean, what you will truly call political talks or negotiations to end the Afghan war. There were, for the past, since 2008 at least, or maybe a few years before that even, from the day when former President Hamid Karzai went into Kandahar back in December 2001 to kind of power handover without any ceremonies, of course. Back then, there were kind of negotiations and promises about negotiations between Karzai and Taliban leaders. So there have always been these talks about talks, but not real talks. We know for a fact that the Taliban are determined to, in a way, militarily enforce their political vision on Afghanistan. And for that, they have gone to some extreme by adopting terrorist and, in a way, mainstreaming terrorist tactics in their war strategy. For example, all the suicide bombings, the complex urban attacks. And one thing is very interesting in Taliban case, that the Taliban, unlike some other Islamist groups, are not, I mean, they make it a point to say that they're not a pan-nationalist or transnational group which is interested in some kind of Islamic caliphate, and they want to be limited to what is Afghanistan today. But at the same time, they have these deep and very troubling relations with many militant groups, particularly Al-Qaeda and many Pakistani groups. And that's why we have these problems of Taliban splintering and parts of the Taliban now becoming the Islamic State or the IS. The other issue, I think, internally within the Taliban is that there are two kinds of Taliban. There are the militant Taliban and there are some political Taliban. So the political factions or the political personalities within the Taliban have always been very weak and pretty much at the mercy of the military leadership. And that is more troubling, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years since Mullah Omar's death, who actually died in 2013. And one other big problem in this whole equation is Pakistan's role and now increasingly Iran's and Russia's role, because Pakistan has, or at some point in the past 14 years, for most of the past 15 years, Pakistan retained a controlling influence over the Taliban. I'm not convinced that Pakistan has lost that influence yet.
Interesting. Please feel free, Eric, Bill, to jump in when there's a point raised without me prompting you. Question. Here, Abu Bakr hinted to several issues like the division within the Taliban, which might be a cause of lack of process. But I also see there is a confusion not only among the Afghan authorities, but also international community, first being the United States. Washington was skeptical about this process from the beginning, I would say. Bill, maybe you want to jump in here. And then and Afghan authorities seems to be having different idea about how to go with this peace process thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the West particularly has been deluding itself for well over a decade about the prospects of peace with the Taliban. Our last guest is absolutely right. The large elements of the Taliban collude with Al-Qaeda and other jihadist groups. You have the deep links with the Pakistani state. Sure, there are some divisions about some aspects of the Taliban may want peace talks, but they're not the powerful factions. They're not the factions that matter. The ones that matter are the military commanders, and these are the ones that have been waging a very, in my opinion, effective insurgency where the U.S. military it has admitted that the Afghan government is losing ground year by year to the Taliban. They've lost almost 25% of territory in a little under 2 years, so either lost or contested to the Taliban. Why would the Taliban have taken a page out of Mao Zedong's, on guerrilla war? They're using negotiations strictly to confuse their enemies. They're using negotiations to extract specific concessions, such as the Bo Bergdahl swap for the Taliban Five, for the Five Al-Qaeda-linked Taliban leaders who were at Guantanamo Bay. We know that they're reading Mao. Mullah Zakir, who was detained at Guantanamo, my colleague Tom Jocelyn, when he went down there, he visited and he said he noticed that Mullah Zakir was reading Mao, and the U.S. military officers at Guantanamo dismissed it and said, see, it just proves that they're not jihadists. No, what it proves is that they're actually effective jihadists who are learning and adapting their strategies to, in order to confuse and confound their enemies. I mean, look, I don't want to pump up the Taliban as mythical and invincible warriors, but I think they are waging an effective insurgency in Afghanistan. They're tricking their enemies who are, look, we have to ask this question, why would the Taliban negotiate now when they're at their peak of strength in 15 plus years of occupation? U.S. forces are down to about 8,000. You have another maybe 5,000-6,000 NATO forces in country. The Afghan military has proven to be ineffective in waging war against the Taliban throughout the country. Why does the Taliban want to negotiate now? And even when we've made attempts to negotiate with Taliban, such as in the past with Mullah Mansour, before he became the head of the Taliban, the U.S. was paying an individual who they thought was Mullah Mansour, and it was a guy who tricked them out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we often, I don't think the United States particularly, and the West and more in general, understands the nature, I'm talking about the political leadership here, understands the nature of the enemy that they face in Afghanistan.
That's interesting what you said, Bill, about the payment to the guy who they confused with Mullah Mansour. Eric, what do you see reasons behind American skepticism about these peace talks from the beginning?
The Taliban being especially in a position of leverage, this is probably the strongest they've been since they reemerged in 2003-2004. Over all of this, as far as the Americans are concerned, is the haunting impending decision of the Trump administration as to whether they're going to increase troop size, and if they do, what's going to be the role of those troops? Are they going back to a combat mission? Are they going back to a clearing? Is it going to be a special operation supported type of, for lack of a better term, surge? But I think also, covering all of this, you've got the sudden, interloping of the Russian government into affecting peace talks. You've got the exclusion of the Americans at these peace talks. You have all sorts of collateral concerns about the political crisis growing in the Afghan government, the relationship between Dostum, Abdullah, and Ghani, as well as refugee problems out east. Some of the lesser reported incidents in the last month are, you have Pakistani military who were killed in an observation post near Momond Agency on the border with Afghanistan. You had, days after that, you had cross-border attacks conducted by the Pakistani military on civilians in Kunar and Nangarhar. And while all this is occurring, Russia has methodically increased its role. We're hearing reports that Iran has been supporting elements of the Taliban out west near Herat, and Ismail Khan is leveling accusations at the Turkmenistan government that they're in some way arming Taliban groups that are crossing the border to the north.
So I think the Trump
administration...
Yeah, I was just saying, Iran is engaging, Moscow is engaging, trying to engage with Taliban. But when all these are happening, why U.S. is missing?
It's a good question. I think the Trump administration is taking a bit to discern what our strategic interests are there, how they're going to take a way ahead that's going to, differentiate or diverge from previous, the surge from the Obama administration in 2009 or the Bush administration prior to that. I'm not convinced yet that the present administration, understands the problem. I don't think that they have a full grasp of the scope, and they may be waiting to sort of show their hand to the public when they've, plainly put that they've determined what U.S. role could be to affect the growing insurgency in Afghanistan. I don't think there's a way ahead that's so clear just yet.
But now we are talking about the Trump. Yes, we don't know about many things yet, what the policy might look like on foreign, even in domestic affairs. But again, we have a Obama period. So looking into his strategy towards these Afghanistan and peace talks, we haven't seen this excitement on their behalf. There should be a reason behind this. Bill, Eric, whoever wants to jump in.
Yeah, I'll jump in there real quick. Afghanistan has been completely absent from the Obama administration's discussion on national security matters. What they're going to do is a complete mystery to all of us who watch this. I think there's four basic options here, and I rule out negotiations because negotiations, in my estimation, have just been a sham for the past 15 years, and it's a wasted effort. It's wasted time. You're granting the Taliban legitimacy, and I think it should be ended. We could either withdraw from Afghanistan. I think what we'll ultimately see is a fragmented state there, with the Taliban, you know, gaining control of vast areas. You'll probably wind up in some type of Northern Alliance type situation with certain percentage controlled by the Taliban, certain percentage controlled by the rump Afghan government. We can, you know, keep the status quo, maybe change some rules of engagement here. I think any mix of that is basically going to lead to some sort of stalemate, will be where we are. We can add maybe 10, 20, whatever, a mini surge, so to speak. Eric alluded to this. And, you know, we might roll back the Taliban from some areas and be able to stop Al-Qaeda from establishing sanctuaries like they did when they had large bases in Kandahar province merely a year and a half ago. So, you know, but that ultimately leads to some sort of stalemate, or they can go all in and do a full surge, maybe with adjusted rules of engagement. But, you know, look, I don't see any political support for that option from the U.S. Public, from even the Trump administration. So I suspect we're going to get option three, where they're going to boost forces and change the rules of engagement, go after more Taliban leaders. But it's really a mystery. And Afghanistan in the United States truly is the forgotten war. Nobody, except for those of us who are following it here, care about it, want to care about it. They don't want, you know, the Obama administration told us Al-Qaeda was defeated, was routed there. They told us Al-Qaeda had for 6+ years 50 to 100 operatives in the country. And lo and behold, when we conduct one raid in Kandahar on two camps, they kill 150 Al-Qaeda operatives in one location alone. I think that tells you, you know, ultimately, and I think Eric was getting to this point, I really think that the U.S. leadership and Western leadership, they really don't understand the nature of this problem. They don't understand the complexity of this problem and what needs to be done. And I don't even think they understand the actors that they're dealing with, specifically on the Taliban side. I am not optimistic that the Trump administration is going to do something decisive, but I'm not optimistic that anything decisive in Afghanistan can be done, because ultimately the elephant in the room here is Pakistan. And as long as Pakistan provides the Taliban with sanctuary, support, and safe haven across the border, and the U.S. refuses to go after the Taliban there, the Taliban will persist as an effective insurgency.
Mm-hmm. Let's take the discussion to our colleagues from Pakistan and Afghanistan. Yes, I understand Pakistan's rule behind all these problems, historical rule, let's say. And also we understand that division within the Taliban, how to proceed with talks or fighting, whatever. But we also see some kind of confusion within the Afghan authorities. At the times, you see them trying to engage with peace talks and outside of the country, inside of the country, talking about Istanbul being a potential point where they could come together. Turkmenistan was mentioned a lot, and then you have a Qatar office. And at the times, you see Afghan authorities fully supporting this idea. On the other hand, when this is happening, you see on the other corner of the country, Afghan helicopters bombarding the Taliban. So how to understand this confusion from the Afghan authorities' point of view? Abu Bakr Hikmatullah, feel free to jump in.
You see, when we're discussing peace talks, it's quite a complicated topic, no doubt. And, you know, we have to discuss it from the point of view of all the stakeholders that are involved. What are they? The Afghan Taliban, the Afghan government, the U.S. I think the biggest elephant in the room, from my point of view, is the U.S. in Afghanistan. And then I'll also briefly touch on what's the Taliban concerns on peace talks, what do they want, and what do they think about the peace process, and then the Afghan government and the Pakistanis. Look, the U.S. presence in Afghanistan is considered the major reason for Taliban to keep up with their insurgency, and that's the one of the preconditions for them to negotiate. Whether, you know, it's an egg-chicken dilemma, whether the U.S. should leave first, then peace will come, or peace should come first, and then the U.S. will leave. But I think, you know, Afghans are getting quite pessimistic with the U.S. presence, to be very frank. So second, talking it from the Afghan Taliban perspective, you see, they have major concerns. They are not sure what their future would be when post-negotiation. They're concerned that, okay, if they stop fighting, what will happen to them? I think looking at from the Hizb-e-Islami peace deal, I think they are not very happy and they are not encouraged, frankly. And, you know, going back to the when the U.S. invaded, the Afghan government was very divided on what to do with the Taliban in peace negotiations. I'll give a very brief example. In 2001, when Baradar was in charge, you know, district in Oruzgan province, he was in contact with President Karzai. So he said, okay, stop fighting and we will accommodate you. You can surrender. But then there were other partners in the government or the administration, like Gulagha Sherzai, who shared his details about his place to the CIA, and his house was raided, but then he eventually escaped. So such a division is always a trouble, and this continues in the Afghan government till today. Pakistan, what are Pakistan's concerns? You know, when Qatar office was created, that was a major concern for the Pakistanis. They fear that, okay, we are losing control over the Taliban negotiation, so they want to keep it very under their influence. Taliban contacts with Iran is a concern for the Pakistanis. Taliban actually having an independent voice, like probably Taibara, is a concern. So we need to look into all these into consideration.
Abu Bakr, before we get into break, briefly, please.
I think I won't agree necessarily with everything Hikmat said. I can see that in Afghanistan, definitely there is a lot of pessimism after all these years, and still not seeing any light at the end of the tunnel in a way. But I will also point out to the fact that in a way, the U.S. presence, international presence in the past 15, 16 years has resurrected the Afghan state that was gone. It was demolished in post-1992. I think at the end of the day, what is possible in Afghanistan is not negotiations between the government and Taliban. What is possible is reconciliation among Afghans. And that is a very long, complicated process. The other thing is that this past week, there has been a tentative agreement between Pakistan and Afghanistan to begin a new counter-terrorism cooperation process. I mean, they want to go with this process where they will be able to not only cooperate with each other, but also verify they have cooperated with some kind of mechanism with all the lists they have given each other. That if they can make some progress on that front and Afghanistan and Pakistan can cooperate, I think the whole dynamic will change. I was listening to Bill and he made a good point of the West not understanding the problem. And then if you don't understand the problem and you prescribe the wrong solution, then it kind of worsens the problem. Afghanistan was never purely a military problem that was supposed to be solved by military intervention alone. I mean, in Washington, after 9/11, of course, it was mostly looked at as a counter-terrorism mission or something like that. But Afghanistan has its own really long-standing issues with Pakistan, with Iran, internal political problems, the issues of nation and state building. And all of that, I mean, in my experience working in Afghanistan, on Afghanistan and looking at it, I'm very optimistic because of the tremendous ability of Afghan people to start something very small and then turn it into something very big. Look at what we have in Afghanistan today. Millions of kids are going to school. This is a country that's relatively better than most post-conflict countries, given despite the fact that levels of violence are high. It's not Somalia or Yemen. So what needs to happen now is that in Washington, and that's where I'm really very worried, that in Washington, President Obama rightly identified the need for reconciliation among Afghans. But where his administration failed was to implement this. I mean, Holbrooke's office didn't deliver much, although he had some good people working for him. And then the U.S. never was able to resolve this complex Afghanistan-Pakistan relationship, or at least get Pakistan to stop militarily helping the Taliban.
Okay. Talking about peace talks with the Taliban, so in the light of the past experience, do we have any faith in positive outcome going forward from these peace talks? If not peace talks, then what should dictate future strategy involving the militant group? We will continue Gandhara podcast discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Gandhara podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Majlis Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Central Asia from local perspective. And the podcast is published every week, most probably Saturdays, on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on Gandhara, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's podcast focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan. We are discussing the Taliban strategy of the Afghan authorities and how to deal with the militant group in the light of previous success and failures in such talks. Discussing the subject with me are Hikmatullah Azami, the research analyst at the Center for Conflict and Peace Studies in Kabul, Eric Jones, former intelligence analyst with the U.S. Marines in Afghanistan, Bill Roggio, editor of Long War Journal with fieldwork in southern Afghanistan, Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. So we have to keep this part brief. So if there's one lesson to learn from these peace talks so far, I'm talking about strategy for future. So what that lesson should be going forward?
I think, you know, as Bill said, and as a commentator mentioned a moment ago, you have a situation with the United States of it's a bizarre situation where you have troops occupying the country and you're largely the most influential external player in the government's politics and the power dynamics, but you have them being isolated and marginalized from the debate by the Russians and quite possibly the Iranians eventually if they decide to support the Russian intervention into peace talks. And I think the point that the legitimization of the Taliban is a real fear is definitely something that should concern the Trump administration. And if the Trump administration is looking to avoid the previous failures of both the Bush and the Obama administration to end the war on a successful note and either integrate the Taliban into a power sharing of the government through reconciliation, or it's to permanently marginalize them and focus a military isolation and a destruction of the force, there has to be a clear strategy. I don't have much confidence, given what we know publicly right now, that the Trump administration is pursuing a strategy which is going to rely on anything other than military force. And as a commentator mentioned a moment ago, you have a multi-dynamic problem in Afghanistan. And the issue of Western forces looking at this primarily as a military problem with a military solution, it is what has befuddled everyone who has tried to find a successful resolution for the past 15 years. There has to be a coupling and a marrying of a number of different aspects of the problem. You have the political problem in Kabul and the different factions of the Kabul government, which are now effectively at odds with one another. You have to involve the Pakistanis and probably the Iranians at this point, and maybe a couple of the Central Asian states into a regional multi-party talks that will you can bring the Taliban to the table. And you can present to them the solution of a reconciliation campaign if they are open to it. I personally don't have faith that the Taliban will be open to this scenario. So what you have to do is invest these regional players, make a concerted effort to outline a dynamic strategy which addresses your political problems, your development problems, your military problems, but at the same time maintain pressure on the Taliban and the insurgent forces which are racking the country with attacks right now. I'm not confident that the Trump administration is looking at the problem this way. I do believe that General Mattis, or Secretary Mattis rather, understands the problem probably better than anybody else in that administration. Right. And if there is going to be a solution which involves anything other than military force, I think at this point you're going to see it come from the Department of Defense. But I think the major risk here is to lose leverage simultaneously with Russian and Iranian intervention into these talks. And the potential legitimization of the Taliban as a political player in Afghanistan, I think that would be catastrophic for the future of the country. Mm-hmm.
As I understand, Eric, you are thinking in a line that the peace talks with the Taliban shouldn't be even one of the options going forward. Is my understanding correct?
There should be a baseline for reconciliation. If the Taliban leadership and the other insurgent groups which operate in tandem with the Taliban agree to come to the table under the auspices of a reconciliation, I think there can be an involvement of Taliban leadership. However, and this is a big however for me, I don't see that as a way forward with the current Taliban leadership. They maintain entirely too much leverage at the moment militarily with their attacks on key district centers and key metropolitan areas, especially in the north, I think they maintain entirely too much leverage to be compelled to come to the table in reconciliation right now.
Okay, let's bring Abu Bakr, Hikmatullah, you guys. What do you think about this, Eric's points?
I don't think the Afghan problem can be solved through a military solution. I think the negotiation and peace talks is the only solution to end the Afghan conflict. And this has to be realized by the Kabul administration and that of the U.S. So what's the most of the Afghans believe that I talk to? They say that Taliban has to be approached the right way. I think what we are missing is we don't know how to reach out to them. You know, the way Afghan government in the international community treats the Taliban is like a proxy. And that, I think, from my contacts with the Taliban, that's what something frustrates Taliban the most. Taliban insiders tell me that Afghan government should not treat us as a Pakistani proxy. You see, here is the problem. President Ashraf Ghani, whenever he's talking, he said, we should reach out, we should solve our problem with the Pakistan government, so then they will bring the Taliban, because Pakistan is the boss. And in return, Afghan Taliban come up with the same solution, that is, they say, we will not talk to the Afghan government, because that's not the boss. We will talk to the Americans, who are key decision makers. So I think Taliban is a force. They are strong enough that they can sustain their militancy. And I don't think the Afghan government or the international forces can defeat,
okay, frankly. Abu Bakr, briefly your point on this, but my second question to you would be, like, now there is a discussion in the town here in Washington, D.C., that more troops might be coming on your way to Afghanistan. Is it a good strategy? Is it a helpful strategy?
Well, I think one of the things that I don't necessarily agree with is this idea that the Taliban are completely independent actors. From what I know and what we see, whenever some Taliban leader in Pakistan began warming towards Afghanistan or develop independent contacts with former President Karzai or even with the current administration, they were killed or detained or something happened to them. So, and the other thing we should not forget is, I mean, during the past quarter century, a lot of people have wrongly labeled Taliban as Afghan nationalist or Pashto nationalist. I think they're not interested in nationalism. They are an Islamist movement, and that is what they, if you look at, it's very clear. If you look at their literature, talk to them, they always justify everything they do in the name of Islam. So within that kind of ideology, dealing with that kind of mindset, I think there has to be a multi-pronged approach, which is something that the Afghan government kind of identified early on when Karzai, I mean, built this High Peace Council in 2010 and later on, but they've never been able to implement it. So I think there are a couple very important things. One is that at whatever cost for peace, I think, and this is true both for Afghanistan and Pakistan, Afghanistan and Pakistan have to swallow some bitter pills and get along with each other. The more they can cooperate, the better for both countries, because their problems are now so much intertwined that they cannot be a solution in isolation. Okay. The other thing is that I think for now, the international community really need to step up and support the Afghan security forces, because while we wait for this reconciliation and it goes on, the Afghan people needs to be protected. And the Afghan state needs, whatever achievement the Afghan state has made in terms of reconstruction, in terms of government structure, they needs to be preserved and built on. And I think the Afghan political class and elites have a large role to play. I'm very sad to note that during the past 15, 16 years, they have engaged in, I mean, mind-boggling corruption. I don't see the kind of patriotism that a lot of people claim that they have. So they really need to step up as well.
Okay. We have to end, unfortunately, our discussion. But before that, as a last point, Eric, I think you mentioned this. Unfortunately, we lost Bill. He also mentioned this new role of Russia in terms of grooming the Taliban. So in the light of these new actors like Russia and Iran in Afghanistan, especially in their relations with the Taliban, so what U.S. should do now?
I think it's a serious concern at this point. I think, the advent of Russian-led talks to address the problems in Afghanistan after 15 years of U.S.-led campaigns, I think this is a serious problem that maybe the Trump administration has lost in priority below its seeming obsession with Syria and the Levant. But Afghanistan represents a serious national interest and a national security problem for the United States. The question is, if the Trump administration is placing its entire bet on a short-term or even a medium-term surge of U.S. military forces, this does nothing to address the problems which military forces have been incapable of addressing for the last 15 years. So as the commentator mentioned earlier, and I mentioned earlier as well, a multi-pronged approach, which includes political aid and development as well as military, maybe an escalation in military, forces targeting certain Taliban groups to achieve some sort of leverage to compel Taliban to accede to talks. But I definitely think this is a serious political problem as much as it is a military problem. And with the seeming surge of the Taliban forces and their potential support by Iranians or Pakistanis or the militaries of each country, we have to come to a serious conclusion about whether or not we are prepared to cede the responsibility of leading the efforts to reconcile these problems to the Russians. And whether or not the Trump administration decides that it wants to address this concern, the problem is going to remain. And the longer that the United States is absent from providing a new, a more multi-party solution to this, the more likely it is that outside forces, notably the Russians and quite possibly the Iranians, are going to take the reins here. And that's not good for U.S. interests. So there is some urgency to underline here. The question is what is the Trump administration considering? What is their conclusion about the way forward? And how highly are they going to prioritize this as a national security interest? Because I think ultimately the focus on Iraq and Syria may outweigh their thinking on Afghanistan.
Okay, thank you very much, Abu Bakr and Hikmatullah. In less than 1 minute, what the strategy should be going forward to Trump administration, and whether the idea of sending more troops to Afghanistan is the best strategy, or if not, what should be done in the light of more involvement by Iranian and Russians into Afghanistan in their relations with the Taliban?
Well, I think the military, like I said earlier, military solution is not the solution. We should not think of short-term solutions for long-term problems. And that's, I think, what might happen. Peace talks is the only way forward. You talk to the Afghans, you talk to the Taliban, and the regional countries agree to this as well. The American administration has to agree to it as well. That's one. And at the same time, while we are discussing the peace talks with the Taliban, the U.S. has to support the Afghan government so it can sustain against the Taliban. And then I think the Taliban are considering to tell the Russians to include and invite the Americans to the Moscow meeting, because without the Americans, there can be no negotiations or can be no solution to it. So I think it has to be a regional initiative, but supported I think the U.S. has to be a key member or a key stakeholder in it. So that's how we can move into it. We have to include Iran, India at some point, Russia, and then take their view and their suggestions on how to move forward.
Okay, Abu Bakr, two distinct points here. Eric says military, and Hikmatullah says, yes, talks should be there. So going forward, in the light of new actors in town, what is your points in less than a minute, please?
Well, we are nearly 16 years into the Afghan conflict. I mean, this latest round of Afghan conflict with direct U.S. military engagement and troops on ground. I think with people like Defense Secretary Mattis and National Security Advisor General McMaster, they are the right people to come up with a new strategy. The bottom line is that this strategy should not be formulated in the light of U.S. domestic political debates and controversies. It should be kind of more long-term historical commitment to a country that has suffered so much. I mean, in conclusion, I would like to note that the Trump administration, and particularly in United States generally, still has a great opportunity to do the right thing, which is to continue engagement with Afghanistan, partner with the Afghan people, and work towards building a peaceful, stable Afghanistan.
Okay. Thank you very much, Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. And also big thanks to Hikmatullah Azami, research analyst at Center for Conflict and Peace Studies in Kabul, Eric Jones, former intelligence analyst with the U.S. Marines in Afghanistan. Also, big thanks go to Bill Rogiu, editor of Long War Journal, whom we lost in the middle of the discussion. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today, for sharing your time and thoughts on Gandhara.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And have a
thank
nice
you.
Day.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast in Washington, D.C. Until next podcast, bye-bye.